This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening, everyone. This is Basma Farhad of the People Speak Radio here at the People Speak. When the people speak, they make a difference. We have a wonderful and incredible young woman, a brave woman, I think, in this day and age, considering all that's going around in the world, in the Middle East, and in the area of peace and war. Recently at a demonstration against the AIPAC in Washington, D.C., five protesters, including tonight's guest, Ariel Vogelson, disrupted Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu in his AIPAC conference speech. This was the speech that was given after his infamous congressional speech, where Netanyahu received 29 standing ovations, more than the President of the United States, which to me was, I wasn't surprised, I was stunned. Ariel, hello and welcome to the People Speak Radio.
Thank you, it's so great to be here.
Wow, that, I have to tell you, I'm very impressed and I'm very proud of some of young women that would take it upon themselves to stand up against such a powerful entity as the AIPAC. Can you tell us what occurred that day?
Yes, definitely. First, I want to share why I was so inspired to stand up for justice in Palestine. For me, this issue is super important. I am a young Jewish woman, and for me, my tradition as a Jewish person teaches me to be a peacekeeper and teaches me to respond nonviolently. And also the words of the Torah actually say, justice, justice, you shall pursue. So for me, I feel that as a Jewish person, I really need to stand up and ensure that the Palestinian people are able to reach liberation and that we are able to work together in solidarity for that liberation. So for me, it was a very important event because AIPAC claims to represent the voice of the Jewish people. And I know that it is not actually representing all of the Jewish people here in America. There are actually plenty of us from Jewish Voice for Peace to Young Jewish and Proud that do not stand with AIPAC and rather stand in solidarity with the Palestinian people. So for me to stand up, I know that we were only able to get five people in. It's actually a rather expensive dinner that we were at when we disrupted Netanyahu, and we were only able to get five people in, but each one of us is representative of so many more people. So I feel like I was standing up because I happen to be able to be the person to take that stand, but I know that I'm standing with so many other people that also believe in justice for Palestine and in ending the occupation. And I felt like it was my responsibility also as an American to take that stand because our tax dollars are going to fund the occupation. So I knew that both as a Jewish person and as an American, I was responsible for taking a stand that night, and I feel very proud of being able to do that, and I feel very lucky that I was able to do it in solidarity with other people.
Were you concerned that night? What were some of the thoughts that were running through your mind before you stood up and actually protested?
One of the things that was important for me was that I knew that the Prime Minister Netanyahu has been saying things like the 1967 borders are indefensible, and he's using that language to justify the continuation of settlements. And in my opinion, the continuation of settlements actually does not help Israelis, and it definitely is hurting Palestinian people. And I actually think that the continuation of settlements is making Israel less safe. And so for me, when I see him standing up and saying the 1967 borders are indefensible, and therefore it's a justification for the continuation of the settlements, in my mind, this is our time to take that language and really state what's happening. So as activists, we came up with different slogans to show what the word indefensible really means, which is not justifiable. So I had a sign that says, occupying land is indefensible. And other people had signs that said, starving Gazans is indefensible. Bombing schools is indefensible. Silencing dissent is indefensible. And for us, we're standing up and explaining the injustices that are going on so that people in the room and through media will know what's actually happening on the ground in Palestine. And when I stood up to disrupt the Prime Minister's speech, he was in the middle of saying that Jerusalem will be the eternal capital for Israel. And as you know, there are many homes right now that are being bulldozed in East Jerusalem. And for me, that was my sign to stand up and say that what the Prime Minister is saying is not justified, and now it's my time to say occupying land is indefensible. And that's the reason that I chose to stand at that moment with the sign that I had. And going into it, I was a little bit worried about people's reactions to me. I knew that I was going to a place where everybody obviously was there because they agreed with the Prime Minister. As you said, there was actually two-thirds of Congress inside that speech. So this is an AIPAC event, and there's two-thirds of Congress that are there. So for me, it was another opportunity to also show my government what I think, and an opportunity for me to take a stand and hopefully see some change in terms of the American policy. And I was a little bit concerned as to what the reaction would be of the people that came to the AIPAC conference. And unfortunately, their reaction was actually really horrific, and I was attacked by the people around me, physically attacked. And I'm not the only one that was physically attacked. Unfortunately, four other people were physically attacked that night. And as you know, Rhea Balea, who stood up in Congress the next day, was also physically attacked.
And she was hospitalized, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
I hope she's doing better.
She sustained a sprained neck as well as a sprained shoulder, and she's actually still in recovery from that experience.
Amazing. Were you shocked by the violence that was perpetrated against you all?
Yes, I was. I feel that in no way is it acceptable to enact violence against somebody, especially when we are remaining nonviolent. We are a nonviolent resistance, and we are in solidarity with the nonviolent resistance that is happening in the West Bank, in Gaza, in East Jerusalem, and all across Palestine. So for us, it is very important to remain nonviolent, and it's very hurtful when I see other people using violence as a means to hurt us. And I'm also very disappointed that that's the reaction that the crowd had at that time. And for me, I think it's important that, you know, if people are sitting at an AIPAC conference listening to the Prime Minister speak, and to me, he's supporting a continuation of the occupation, it's like the trickle-down of violence. The trickle-down of that is the fact that people are willing to attack me, a person who's just standing up with a sign. So if you're willing to attack me in that moment, then you're probably willing to support policies that continue the occupation.
May I ask you, now I know that you're very well-traveled, so I'm assuming you've been to traveled to Israel. Have you ever lived in Israel?
The longest I've ever spent is 2 months, and I have spent time in various different cities as well as different places in the West Bank, and I have also been to Gaza on a very short trip. Unfortunately, when I went to Gaza, it was very difficult to actually enter, and we were only allowed entry for 2 days. So that experience was very short, but I've spent 2 months traveling in the West Bank. I've been to Jenin and Ramallah and Hebron. I've been to Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, Haifa. So I've definitely traveled in the region and have had many different experiences there.
Now, because you were, I mean, was it a choice to go to the AIPAC dinner as opposed to going to Congress that day?
Well, the AIPAC dinner was the night before, so the AIPAC dinner was on May 23rd, and the next day was Congress. And in an ideal world, we would have even more people inside of these events. And there were so many people standing outside. And what's interesting is Move Over AIPAC, which is the organization that helped mobilize people to do these actions and also held a conference on Saturday. Move Over AIPAC is, there's 100 different organizations that came together to make Move Over AIPAC happen. So that just shows you how strong this movement is and that I'm not a single person standing up against the occupation, that I'm supported by so many people. And the reality is that these events are actually rather hard to get into. The event that Rhea Balea disrupted in Congress, it's a special session of Congress, and in order to be there, you have to have, you actually have to have a ticket that's given to you by a congressperson. So the amount of people that would love to be inside, it's not actually doable to have that happen. And the same is true for the AIPAC conference. Those tickets are actually rather expensive, so it's not quite doable for activists on a low income to pull that off, to have more people inside. But it is very important that we take a stand at these locations. And the reason that we were inside of AIPAC is because there were two-thirds of Congress that were also there. So we needed our voices to be seen at that time.
Can I ask you what you as a group in any of the affiliations that you have are doing to help inform Americans about AIPAC and how it affects policy in the United States?
We held an amazing conference on Saturday. We had 375 people in attendance, and we ran workshops around what AIPAC is and what we can do to counter that movement. So AIPAC is a really strong lobby group, and they have a lot more money, obviously, than we have as a counter movement, but we have a lot of people power. So I really do believe that we have a lot of possibility right now to create real change. And we also have been lobbying Congress and writing letters and placing a demand on Congress, especially because our tax dollars, it's about $3.5 billion, I believe, a year that is going towards Israel's military and directly feeding into the current occupation. So we have been lobbying Congress, and we have been writing letters, and we have been taking all those conventional means as well to try to create change. And we do run educational workshops. And we also have, you know, written our own articles, and we have a blog. There's also moveoverapac.org that you could look at for more information on what we're working on. So there are definitely ways for people to tap in and get involved.
Now, I don't know myself. It's kind of difficult to judge when you're watching television programming, especially standing ovations in Congress or AIPAC or wherever it may be. There are a lot of people, such as John Conyers, Dennis Kucinich, Barbara Lee, Lynn Woolsey, that came out in support of the U.S. aid ship to Gaza. Do you know if any of these congressional members were standing and applauding Netanyahu?
I would hope that they were not. And I can't say either way because I, like you, was watching that particular session on TV, and I couldn't tell. Like, you really, it's very hard, as you know, to actually see who's standing and not. But you can see that the majority of the room, unfortunately, was standing and giving ovations. And I tend to think that that is because of how strong AIPAC is in terms of lobbying. And I think that is very connected into, you know, funding and where they're getting their money from.
Let me ask you something, Ariel. I know as a Palestinian and an activist, when we sit around our living rooms in the evening and discuss some of the issues that have befallen the Palestinian people as well as their nation, we know exactly what AIPAC is and how it reflects on international policy, how it affects on domestic policy. And what do Jews sit around and talk about when they talk about? Are you guys in solidarity as far as that, or is there argument as to the legitimacy of this issue? Or don't you
hang
around with those people?
I actually think it's amazing that you're asking me this question on this very specific night. Tonight is actually a Jewish holiday called Shavuot, which is the day of receiving our holy scripture, the Torah. And right now I'm actually part of an amazing community called the Community of Living Traditions, which is a Jewish, Christian, Muslim community. And we live together in Stony Point, New York, and we are committed to nonviolence, as well as learning from each other's traditions, studying the way of peace, and actually following through with that. And we have a whole curriculum around justice in Palestine. So I think it's really beautiful because the Jewish community here that I'm connected to is called the Shomer Shalom community. And Shomer Shalom literally means in Hebrew to guard the peace. And we believe that we come from a tradition of nonviolence and that our texts teach us to be nonviolent. And so for us, when we sit around, we very much are in solidarity with the Palestinian people, and we are very much in solidarity specifically with the nonviolent resistance that is happening internationally as well as right here in America. So that's the kind of conversations that we're having. And tonight we're actually having a really beautiful study session amongst the three faiths about what we can do from our faith perspective to ensure that we have real justice and real peace in our time.
You know, I think what strikes me the most as a Palestinian activist against the occupation, Ariel, is the unbelievable cognitive dissonance of aggression that exists, this total denial. Does that make sense to you? Do you understand that in any way?
did not. Can you explain a little bit further?
Well, I, you know, people will see that Palestinians are being, their homes are being bulldozed, their property is being destroyed, their children are being targeted and killed, they're being held in prisons without charges. A totally unjust community is oppressing an entire nation, and everybody wants to justify it. It never made any sense to me. If this happened to the Jews, we would say, wow, this can't possibly... It did happen to the Jews, and we said, this is not right. Why is this allowed to happen today? And why can so many Israelis agree with the occupation?
Yeah, I think that's a really complicated and intense question to try to wrestle with and figure out. And for me, it's very clear that the occupation is unacceptable and that checkpoints are unacceptable, bombing is unacceptable, using white phosphorus gas is unacceptable, hurting people is unacceptable. And that, for me, stems from the way I was educated as a Jewish person. My knowledge around justice comes specifically from being raised in a Jewish community that taught me that justice and peace are the way of our people. So, to me, I think it's actually very important that people start to separate out what is religion from what is a state, and what is politics from what is a people. And I think that the same way that it's important for me to speak out in America around the fact that our country is still occupying other countries, I think it's important for Israelis to take a stand when their country is occupying Palestinian people. And I really support, you know, there's a lot of people who are refusing to serve in the Israeli military. There are people who are refuseniks, and I support them in that effort and in the work that they're doing. And I would love to see even more of a movement here in America and really internationally. I would love to see the movement get even stronger.
Well, you know, there was this week there have been a number of deaths of activists that have tried crossing the border. Have any of the organizations that you're affiliated made any statements to the Israeli government in response to these deaths?
I think that they, to be honest, I'm not actually sure because I've been so focused on the community that I'm with here, but I hope that they have, and I personally, you know, would be making that statement that it's not okay. And in general, I think it's important that we as people that are working for liberation stay strong together and can really see, like when you were saying, like, how is it that people can ignore what's happening to the Palestinian people, I think the same is true for how we in America have ignored what's happening to the people in Iraq and have ignored what's happening to the people in Afghanistan. And I think that that's part of what happens with our media. I think that our media is teaching us right now to ignore these occupations. And I think it's actually our jobs as activists and educators to really show people what's happening and to show how all these struggles are connected, that in order for us to actually be liberated in America, Americans really pride ourselves on freedom. Well, if we actually want to be free, then other people need to have real freedom and real liberation and cannot continue to live under occupation.
You know, the interesting thing is throughout the entire Middle East, any of the Middle East peace talks have always focused on the Palestinian-Israeli issue as being one of the prime issues that they would like to see addressed. And people have always asked me, well, why are you so consumed with the outside of the fact that I'm Palestinian? I said, because if we can fix the Palestinian issue, we can go on to address the other issues. But if we can't fix the core issue, it's like dealing with symptomology. If you only address the symptoms and not the core relationship, I think that a lot of the one of the things that Israel has always forgotten is that the Arab nations have always been watching what it's done to Palestine, and they knew that if they could get away with it with Palestine, they could get away with it with everybody. So this is part of the problem. But it's neither here nor there. We have so much that can you tell me what happened after the protests that evening?
So my experience is that after I stood up inside of APAC, I was the first person to stand up inside of the APAC conference. I stood up with my banner that says occupying land is indefensible. I was attacked by the people around me. And then I was escorted out by security. And I was asked to leave the premise by security. And then after I stood up, I know that four other people stood up, so that there was a total of five of us disrupting Netanyahu's speech. And on the outside was Code Pink people, people from Move Over APAC, various different peace organizations were on the outside also protesting APAC. And they had been there, you know, all day. They'd been protesting. And like I said, on Saturday there was this big conference of education around moving over APAC and the APAC agenda. So what was nice about doing my protest, like I said before, is that it wasn't an isolated thing that I was doing. It was very much in connection with an entire movement. And so it was nice to exit the conference center and to know that there was a group of people that were standing there in protest of APAC.
May I ask you, I know Ray Abelia was charged with disturbing the peace during the event. Were you also charged with anything?
No, we were not charged with anything.
Okay. That's interesting. Netanyahu said to his congressional audience, you can't have these protests in Tehran. He said, this is real democracy. What is your feeling?
I'm actually super outraged at that statement, because at that exact moment was when people were attacking and physically, brutally beating up Ray to the point that she ended up in the hospital. So he's, you know, Prime Minister Netanyahu is standing up and saying, wow, look, we have a protester amongst us. Isn't that great here in America, because we are a democracy, we can have this experience. In Iran, they would never have this. But, you know, she's being physically
beat them.
Yeah, but she's being physically beat up, and then she proceeds to be arrested. So I'm like, wait a minute, that doesn't sound like democracy to me. And who's addressing the fact that it is not okay to be violent with other people, and it's not okay to beat people up? And if you have a difference of opinion with somebody, you have the right to speak words, but you do not have the right to hit people, abuse people, or push people to the ground.
I just, you know, some of the pictures, some of the photographs of the people grabbing at them, at you guys, was just amazing. Men and women, fists being drawn. I mean, it really is very stunning to see that happen here in our country.
Yeah, I think people, it's a very emotional issue. And I do want to say that as a Jewish person, I understand the concept of anti-Semitism. I have firsthand experienced anti-Semitism. And my grandmother, when she came, you know, when she was growing up, and her family like couldn't even get housing because of their Jewish identity. And so for me, having that background actually encourages me to work for justice. And for me, the struggle to end anti-Semitism is deeply connected to other struggles, for example, ending Islamophobia. I see these struggles as really deeply connected, and the more we work together, the better our lives are going to be. I think that there is a huge power structure that's at play right now that wants to separate people by religion, that wants to say Jewish people, Muslim people, Christian people, Hindu people, all of you are so different. But in actuality, we're actually very similar. And what's different are the way the religion is being misused. I think that when people try to justify the violence that Israel is doing by saying it in the name of the Jewish people, that to me is a misuse of my religion and my faith. And I think it's important that we stand up against that, and that we stand with our Muslim and Christian brothers and sisters in solidarity to work to end all isms, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, racism, sexism. These struggles are actually very deeply connected.
Well, I certainly agree with you there. Ariel, this fall, the Palestinians are planning on declaring Palestine a state. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that's a great idea, because I think that people, we can't wait for an outside force. We actually are the change that we've been waiting for. We can't really wait for government to make something happen. We can't wait for the American government, because we've been waiting and they're not doing anything. And we've been trying to influence the Israeli government to create change. And I think that movements, real change happens from the people. I look at the civil rights movement here in America, and what I see is that people made the real difference. In order for the policy and the laws to be changed to end segregation, you had to have people that were willing to do lunch counter sit-ins, and you had to have people that were willing to do nonviolence and go the distance to really end segregation. So it was a movement that came from the people. Like when you look at Egypt, that was a movement of the people. So for me, it's very clear that real change is going to happen when people decide now is the time and we're going to work together to create change. And to look back in history and find those inspirations, like look back to Gandhi and the Salt March and find times in history where people organizing have worked, and that should be our focus point and our inspiration for the future. And also to say that I hope that in the creation of a Palestinian state, I hope that it's created from a foundation of liberation. Because I think that there are Palestinian factions that are violent and that don't even necessarily benefit Palestinian people. And so that, you know, it's the same thing. Like, whenever you have change or revolution or there's a space for new power to come in, I think it's very important that it's coming from a place of peace and liberation and justice. And that specifically means making sure that people, all people, have equal rights.
Well, on that note, we're going to take a short break, Ariel. The People Speak will be with you in just a few minutes with our guest, Ariel Vogelson. And hang on, folks. More to come. Get your questions ready.
Can you imagine having banks and credit that serve the community, solvent and free of Wall Street corruption, that create strong local economy and job growth? Banks that put profits right back into the local business and economy, not into far-off foreign investments or high-risk and exotic finance schemes of the super-rich.
Yes, we can.
Can you imagine eliminating income tax, ensuring economic stability, increasing social programs, and improving the standard of living for all Americans while paying off the federal debt?
Yes, we can.
That's right. It's all possible.
Yes.
Can you join us in working towards a solution utilizing principles suggested by our founding fathers through united action and strategies outlined in articles, blogs, and Wiki spaces where you can share and collaborate?
Uh-huh.
Please visit Ellen Brown's website, webofdebt.com, and help us make America's money and future of, by, and for the people once again. Can you do that?
Yes, we can.
Caution. If you are prone to being disturbed by real truth and real solutions, please continue to consult with your qualified Wall Street cheerleader economist on network television. Side effects for not visiting webofdebt.com include drowsiness, loss of job, loss of control of national finance, loss of country, followed by panic attacks and rude awakenings.
Web of Debt has now been translated into Spanish, titled Telaraña de Deuda, available on Amazon.com or at telarañadedeuda.org.
We teach them how to tie their shoes. They teach us how to live our lives. We teach them long division. They teach us how to bank online. Our children will always outgrow us. But for the first time in generations, they may not outlive us. Over the last 25 years, the percent of overweight children aged 6 to 11 has doubled. The percent of overweight teenagers tripled. Obesity kills. Heart disease, high blood pressure, diabetes, all are linked to obesity, a problem that could be greatly reduced just by having a place to exercise. Right now, people are working hard to put parks and playgrounds where children live, where children will use them. Finding out how you can help is as easy as tying your shoes. Log on to earthshare.org now, a public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson from Normal. For 30 years, Normal has provided a voice for the millions of Americans who smoke marijuana responsibly. Thousands of sick and dying patients find marijuana effective as a medicine, including cancer, MS, and AIDS patients. 9 states have legalized its use. To learn how you can help, contact Normal at www.norml.org or call toll-free at 888-67-NORML.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land. This land is my.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests from various organizations share their work and strategies which impact the world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, here on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
Welcome back, everyone, to The People Speak Radio. Our guest tonight, Ariel Vagosyan. Ariel is one of five protesters that disrupted the Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu's APEC conference speech. During that altercation, some of her co-protesters were hurt. A very brave act, if I do say so myself, but then I'm a Palestinian, so what do I know? Welcome back, Ariel. Thank you for being with us this evening. It's a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Ariel, you were talking earlier about a group that you are living. Is this a communal kind of living environment, or is this a small area that you live in?
We are the Community of Living Traditions. Our website is the communityoflivingtraditions.org, and we are a physical community that lives at the Stony Point Retreat Center. And we are a community made up of Jewish people, Christian people, and Muslim people. And we have a commitment to studying and learning from each other's faiths, as well as being allies for each other in terms of staying in our faiths and in our communities and being strong and working for justice. We come from the belief that nonviolence is the best strategy to create peace and justice in this world. And so we actually have a curriculum that we run around justice in Palestine. We also work on food justice, immigrant rights, and prison reform. And right now we are in the middle of an amazing internship that is for young people ranging in age from 18 to 32.
And I know that you're teaching people various tactics and conflict resolution, but outside of that, what are your plans for this organization? Is there a belief that this could grow into something much more?
Well, right now what's also really amazing about this program is that we are farming on the land that we live on, which is another really special and important component of this program, is a connection to the earth and the environment and an awareness about environmental activism. And for us, this is a growing community. We are a year old right now, and we run here year-round, and the internship program happens in the summer. So we are very new and very much building what is possible. And also we are, as individuals, you know, when people last year, some of the interns have already gone on to be involved and invested in other justice programs and in being activists.
Well, that sounds like a great aspiration, and I wish you all the luck in the world. Perhaps one day we will be able to see the fruits of the labor of various organizations such as yourself grow to help change things that are such as what's happening in the Middle East right now, in Palestine, Syria. You know, the UN High Commissioner rebuked Israel based on the Nexa killings. Have you heard anything about that within the community?
Actually, for some reason, I couldn't hear what you just said. I think there was like a phone thing. So can you actually repeat that, please?
I was saying that the UN High Commissioner, the United Nations High Commissioner, rebuked Israel in response to the Nexa killings. Have you, as a group, heard anything about that or had any thoughts about that?
You mean in terms of the community that I'm living in right now?
Yes. Or even the peace activist community as well.
Yeah, I think that there has been a lot of discussion about that, and I hope that there'll be more continued conversation.
Let me ask you something. What would you suggest for people to do under the circumstances? How do people protest and against the occupation here in the United States? What is the best way to handle that?
I think the biggest thing that we could be doing is really getting involved in the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign, which is happening internationally. They're doing really well with this campaign in Europe right now. And here in America, it's really taking off as well. One thing that you could do right away is check out a website called stealingbeauty.org, which is a specific campaign against Ahava. And this campaign is being organized by Code Pink Women for Peace. And Ahava is a beauty care product. It's geared towards women, which is why Code Pink has specifically taken on the boycott of this product. This product is actually made in the settlement, even though on their label they say made in Israel, but in actuality it's made in the settlement, which goes against and violates international law. So we have taken a stand specifically around Ahava as one way of signing up for boycott. And we're asking people to no longer carry Ahava in their stores, and we're also asking that individuals no longer buy that product. And boycott, divestment, and sanctions, as you know, has been used many times by many different movements, whether you look here in America at the Civil Rights Movement, boycott was incredibly effective. In South Africa, divestment was an incredibly effective tactic to end occupation. It's also a nonviolent tactic, and I very much think that the way to end the violence that is going on in the Middle East is to have a nonviolent response. And so boycott, divestment, sanctions is part of a nonviolent movement.
Thank you. We have a caller on the line, Ariel. Caller, your name and your question for Ariel.
Hello?
Yes.
Assalamu alaikum. My name is Ifaq al-Islam from the Chicago area, and I have a comment for Ariel. I'm very glad to hear from you. You are more courageous than most Arabs and some Muslims. It's excellent what you are doing for the Palestinian people. I'm very grateful, and I love what you're doing. Peace be with you always and forever. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Ikhlas. It was very nice to hear from you. As you can see, Palestinians often... you know, we become inspired when we see young Jewish people, the dissenters in Israel against the occupation are very important to our cause. And you know, oftentimes our media here in the United States does not allow anybody to understand that there are Jews in Israel that stand in total solidarity with the Palestinian movement and with the Palestinian people. And unfortunate, and you know, we get a bum rap for being anti-Semites because everybody wants to kind of push you all in under that one broad umbrella of being a Semite, and anything that disagrees with you is anti-you. And it's, unfortunately, it's not true. And the other thing is that there are a lot of good people in Israel that understand that this occupation is not acceptable. And even the people that are not so good and think that the occupation may be acceptable are still under the impression that it is no longer a security issue for Israel to continue with the occupation. So that's something that people are starting, I think, to wake up to. Do you think that there's a chance that in our lifetime we'll see peace between Palestine and Israel?
Yeah, I definitely think so. And I think it's really important that we operate from that place, because if we operate from that place, then that's what will become a reality. If we think that peace is not possible, then that's what will be true. And I think it's very hard to work in a movement if you think that you're not going to be a successful movement. And I know, because we've seen other instances in our past and in our history, that it really is possible to create liberation. And so that is what we have to continue to work for. It's actually necessary. I think it's necessary for the survival of all people, for the survival of the Jewish people and for the survival of the Palestinian people. I think working for justice is the only answer. I don't think right now that the current system in Israel is sustainable for Jewish people either.
Can I ask you what your thoughts are? You said that you spent a couple of days in Gaza. Can you tell me what you saw while you were there?
It was a very intense and very brief and powerful and amazing 2 days. I saw a lot of devastation, a lot of blown-out houses. I saw mosques that had been blown up. I saw schools that had been blown up. it was very intense to see that level of devastation and to see a population of people without the ability to move freely, and they didn't have the privilege to leave. So it's very intense to show up in somebody else's community when you know that they don't have the right to leave, and that fishermen that cannot actually fish because they can't really get their boats out far enough because the Israeli military is about 3 miles out on the shore. And it just became very clear to me that these people are not living in freedom. You know, oftentimes people will say, I've heard people use the argument that, oh, you know, Israel took the settlements out of Gaza, so, you know, what do you mean these people don't have their freedoms? Like, that's their own fault. And what people don't realize is that, yes, the settlements were withdrawn from Gaza, but the people living in Gaza are not, you know, controlling their borders, are not controlling their airways, are not controlling their waterways, and are not given access to basic necessities like food and water, as well as, you know, at that time when I was there, they weren't even allowed to get glass to help rebuild their houses. So there was like a list of things that you were not allowed to bring in with you, even in terms of humanitarian aid. So when people say, oh, you know, the settlements were taken out of Gaza, therefore these people must have their freedom, it's like that's just not true. And I think people don't know that. I think oftentimes that story is not told in America. And I think we, you know, by going there and seeing firsthand, I'm able to return with that story and to return with photos and to show people and educate people that the violence that was experienced there is tremendous, and the devastation that these people are living with is tremendous, and that now they're left with having to rebuild their homes and also having to deal with the fact that they don't have freedom of movement.
Absolutely. Just amazing. We have a question from one of our audience members. Don in Canada asks, what excuse is Israel providing for the expanding settlements? It is my understanding the population of Israel is shrinking. I think they're probably two separate questions.
I think this actually goes back to the Prime Minister Netanyahu's language. So the reason my sign said, again, occupying land is indefensible is because I'm directly connecting what the Prime Minister said. He's using that word very differently from me. I'm using the word indefensible to mean not justified. The occupying land is not justified. You can't justify that at all under, you know, whether you're talking about politics, whether you're talking about faith, it's immoral to occupy people and to occupy land. That's the standpoint that myself, as well as thousands, hundreds of thousands of people believe worldwide. What I think the Prime Minister is doing is saying that Israel cannot defend on the 1967 border, therefore he's trying to say it's justifiable to build settlements. That logic to me actually does not make any sense. I think Israel is actually less safe because of those settlements. I think that it takes so much resources to try to defend that area. It doesn't make any sense to continue to build settlements when it's been, you know, there's been agreements made over and over again saying do not build more settlements. Even the president, you know, Barack Obama, is saying don't build more settlements, and Israel's turning their back and just continuing to do it anyway.
Which is, you know, just absolutely fascinating. Even Israelis are telling them the settlements are wrong. Stop the settlements, and they're still building, which doesn't make any sense to me. But then I don't think the whole thing makes any sense to me. The second part of Don's question was, it is my understanding the population of Israel is shrinking. Do you find that to be true, Ariel? Have you heard any statistics on that?
I think what's really interesting to talk about is the idea of people for a long time in the peace movement, there was a real call at one point for a two-state solution, to have a Palestinian state side by side with an Israeli state. And the reality of that is it's becoming increasingly more and more difficult to even imagine that as a reality, because Palestinian land has been so cut up and because there's checkpoints everywhere, that the concept of two states side by side living in equality is becoming really hard to actually imagine and to actually make a reality. Considering, you know, you can't even have access from Gaza to the West Bank, I don't really understand how people are going to continue that visioning of a two-state solution. And so what I think becomes interesting about that is that Israel prides itself on being a democracy. And part of being a democracy is that everyone has the right to vote and that, you know, you're going with the majority of the people. So if you're going to make it impossible to have a two-state solution and you end up with a one-state solution and everybody in that region all of a sudden has the right to vote, well then, what would the power structure look like? Who would be, you know, elected into office? So I think that's an interesting conversation for people to have. I think that people that live in the region, Israelis and Palestinians, are going to really need to figure out what does it mean to create the kind of communities and the kind of society that they want to live in. And ultimately, people are going to have to figure out how to work together. Because there is a reality that, at this point, really, nobody in the region is going anywhere. Right? Like, it's not like any population of people is going to suddenly disappear. So I think the ultimate reality is, like, the situation is there, and people can go back and address the hurts and the problems. But ultimately, the first step is end the occupation and then figure out how are people going to live together.
Do you, do you see this as a, you know, oftentimes people will sit there and say that, you know, of all the people in the world, the Jews would never do this to anyone. But that's really not how the cycle of violence works. In fact, the victims often become perpetrators. Do you see this happening in this situation?
I think, from you, again, it's very important to separate religion and politics. And I think it's problematic that all of a sudden, everywhere globally, religion and politics have become very much connected. And I actually think that these things are very separate. When you look at what Jewish tradition states, it's a culture of nonviolence, and it's a culture of peacemakers. We have quotes in the Torah that says, love your neighbor as yourself. Like, do not cause any harm unto another people. Welcome the stranger into your home. So that's the place that Jewish people, you know, are... That's our text. Like, that's what the tradition is that we're coming from. So when you have a government that is doing something completely different, that to me is political. It is part of political, military. It's part of a continuation of what I see as a military-industrial complex. It's part of how globally people are valuing money over people is what I think is happening. And that's very unfortunate. And I see that, you know, here in America, too. I actually think it's very important that people connect struggles. I think that America is also occupying other people's lands and other people's countries, and it's important that we also speak out against that.
Well, I'll be quite honest with you. My feelings on this is that religion and faith are being used as weapons in a political
Definitely.
Battle.
Yes.
And
that's why I think it's important that we as peacemakers reclaim our faiths and reclaim our cultures and our identities.
Exactly. And there's nothing wrong with that. And you know, for those of you that think that there is, you need to look at how Ariel is living her life. And I think it's important that that we once again learn to identify with who and what we are, and that it's okay to be who and what we are, and we don't have to fit into somebody else's cookie cutter to be able to live with self-determination, with dignity, and with a relative amount of peace in our lives. And unfortunately, at the hands of the Israeli occupation, Palestinians have been denied that for close to 60 years now. So it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for being here, Ariel.
Thank you
so
much.
We will keep tabs on you and your group, and I hope one day to have you back again.
Thank you. I hope so, too.
And next week's guest, folks, Jesse Ventura, the infamous Jesse Ventura. We'll see what he has to say about his new book. So until then, have a great evening, and remember, when the people speak, you can make a difference. Ask Ariel about that. Thank you very much, everyone. Good night.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. made for you and me.